Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business. There's all basics there, but maybe it's RV, maybe it's boat, motorcycle, whatever it may be. They'll get you the right insurance. Make sure you're completely covered. And at the same time, do everything they can to save you money. So big during these times. Saving money. It's all at Purdy Insurance, the pros' pros. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. Our play-by-play call of the day. How did George Kittle do this?
One play. Purdy. A lot of room now. Odin up over the middle. Oh, what a catch by Kittle. Are you kidding? George Kittle.
You're going to see Kittle. He's not even really part of the route. This is just scramble drill. Brock Purdy kind of breaks the cardinal rule. You never throw the ball back across the middle of the field. But in this case, George Kittle makes a circus one-hand catch.
Nothing.
What struck me about the catch is that, you know, he's juggling and you can see his eyes are on the ball the entire time. He knows he's going to get hit. He knows. And he still keeps looking at the ball. That's the difference between him and a lot of other lesser players. Like, he knows he's going to get hit. He runs enough stuff over the middle, and yet he just locked in on the ball.
And he's as tough as they come. I'll give him that.
You know, it's interesting because he played against Penn State, and he was nondescript. When he played at Iowa against Penn State, he was a nondescript player. And honestly, just didn't really... didn't have big games against Penn State. It was just like, it was, you know. But at that point, Penn State was better, too. But didn't. Like, seeing him develop the way he has in the NFL, in the mode of, I mean, Dallas Clark was terrific. He's better than Dallas Clark. I mean, Noah Fant, you know, they've had some good tight ends. Hockenson's a good player. Fant's a good player. Dallas Clark was terrific. He's the best of the group. Really terrific. By the way, in that game, you saw Tony Pollard go down, and they thought maybe it was a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, brutal.
It turned out he broke his leg. Oh, awful. And he was really, the last 3 years has been terrific for them.
And still underutilized at that times. Which is just baffling to me, but that's the reason why the Cowboys haven't won, haven't been to the NFC title game in almost three decades now.
No, I disagree with you on that. I think for the most part they've used him pretty well, because I'm not so sure he is a 25-carry-a-game guy, where just the beating of it over and over again. I don't think they've made a mistake with how they've... Now, notice they've utilized him more the last 2 years because he's become the better player.
Yeah.
But in short yardage, they don't use him.
Yeah, that still has gone to Zeke.
Right.
Yeah.
I think they've done a good job of spotting him. Sometimes one of the jobs of a coach is to put the player in the best spot where the player can excel. And I think for the most part, Jason Garrett and Mike McCarthy have put Pollard in the spot where he can excel. Now he's at a point where I think he can accept more. But is he the every down guy? Just like Miles Sanders once in a while. Miles Sanders is built more to be an every down running back than Pollard is. But still, he'll be subbed out for Boston Scott sometimes, especially against the Giants.
Yes, exactly right. Boston's the Giant killer.
I mean, he seems to have big games against the Giants over and over again.
Earth to Wade Martindale.
Well, no. I mean, that's just the way it goes. It's just, for whatever reason. It has nothing to do with... It's just the way it goes. It's not... This is not a Pro Bowl guy. If I'm the Giants, do I sign him? No.
No, yeah.
Right, I don't sign him. But he fits well with when they need him, how they need him. He does a good job. And a lot of those stats against the Giants were against bad Giants teams, too.
Also true, yeah. Right,
bad Giants teams. Now, the other night with a great Philadelphia team around him, yeah, he's able to excel. He also is excelling at points of the game where the defense is worn down.
Yeah, because he's the changeup guy. Yeah, absolutely.
So, it does make... But, you know, one of the jobs of a coach is to put players in the best spot, especially when they're bringing them along. I always felt with Zeke Elliott there, Pollard was brought along the right way. But there's no question he is, in by a wide margin, has passed out Zeke Elliott. I mean, by a wide margin, he's passed out Zeke Elliott. That's why he's getting more and more... all the reps out there instead of Elliott, because he needs to be. In past years, I thought the Cowboys actually spotted him the right way, where he could excel, gave them jump, and that. I mean, I'll give you a basketball example. Kanye Clary has had more minutes the last two games, but is he going to start against Rutgers? No. No, it's still going to be Cam Winter and Jalen Pickett. They're bringing Clary along in such a way where they're putting him in spots where he can help the team and also excel and in turn gain confidence doing it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Rutgers is tomorrow night. And Naismith rolls over in his grave every time Rutgers plays. He says, "This isn't the game I invented."
That doesn't surprise me.
But, okay, but.
They are a good team this year.
Okay. Steve Peichel has looked at his roster and said, what is the best way for this roster to win? And this is the way they picked. That's his job. His job is not about juicing up TV ratings. His job is not about aesthetics. His job is to look at his team and say, okay, personnel-wise, this is how we need to play. Okay. That's his job. And I have great respect for the job he's done and respect for their players. But Connell's a terrific defensive player. Cliff Amore is really good inside, really good player. And then they've added in Cam Spencer, who Andrew Funk knows very well from his days at Loyola.
That's right.
And Cam Spencer's a good shooter. Didn't have a good shooting game at all against Michigan State, but is a good shooter. But they're a clutch and grab team, and it's a team that also – is averaging 13.5 offensive rebounds per game. So the missed shot is a critical part of their offense, because they'll get the missed shot and they'll give themselves a second chance or a follow-up. But they're averaging 13.5 offensive rebounds a game.
Yeah, they're a very physical team. Bucknell played them right before the holiday
Got
break,
crushed.
And it was... Yes, they did. Yes, because... They just couldn't keep up with the physicality that Rutgers brings to the table.
And that place is a madhouse. I mean, it's, you know, 8,000 fans are right on top of you. So they give their team a boost. There's no question about that. I mean, they don't, you know, the only teams that get intimidated by crowds are lesser teams. Okay? If you're a good team, you don't get intimidated by a crowd. Right? You just go out and you play. And, you know, part of it's going to be, let's face it, part of it's going to be how the game's officiated tomorrow.
Exactly right. After another 20s game at home over the weekend in Happy Valley.
Well.
And then Nebraska win. Every time I see low scores, I think of you now. But you're still right, though, about it.
Well.
It's just bad basketball.
Penn State shot 68% in the second half of the game. 68%. Played beautiful basketball in the second half. First half was a tractor pull. Hit enough threes to make sure they were in front of the break. But, you know, Terry Weimer, the head of officiating, was at the game on Saturday. I talked with Terry that morning, as a matter of fact. And Larry Scarrato and Paul Sells were two of the officials who are two of the top officials in the Big Ten. And by the way, I felt officiated the game as two of the top officials of the Big Ten.
All right.
They officiated the game as two of the top officials of the Big Ten.
Oh, okay. I see your point now.
It's a three-man crew.
Yeah.
All right. And the other one inserted, I'm not going to say his name, but inserted himself into the game, and it's like, no, do not do that. Okay? Okay, guess what? You got two terrific guys there. Just blend in.
Yeah. I didn't realize this is a pretty big week as far as the standings go for Penn State. You're only a game behind Rutgers, and you're half game behind Michigan State, and you got Michigan on Sunday.
Yep. So this is a big week. Penn State has so far two quad one wins. If they can win tomorrow, it'd be three.
Yep, not two. Yeah.
So you start thinking about those opportunities. Stealing one on the road is huge in this conference. It's a lot like tennis, holding serve at home, and then going on the road. Can you somehow break serve? Jalen Pickett. Last two games, I have not been enamored from my seat as to how he has been officiated. I'm not saying you need every break in the book. That's not what I'm down. But if you're committing fouls, you're committing fouls. But I kind of feel offensively, there's a lot of clutch and grab with him. And, sorry, those are fouls. And he got called for offensive fouls in the game. You're like going, offensive fouls? That goes back to inserting yourself into the game.
Gotcha. No, yeah, I've seen it.
And it's like, okay, we'll see how that plays out tomorrow. Marcus Higgins. When you're at one spot like he was at for 11 years, and three different coaches are told along the way, this is a guy you need to keep, what does that tell you about the guy? When Anthony Poindexter thinks highly of you, what does that tell you about the guy?
Probably a pretty good candidate.
Right? And he's taken good players and turned them into all-conference players in the ACC. And a big plus there. And plus, let's face it, he knows the Tidewater area. Tidewater area has some players. So I think that is, it's a hire I really like. I mean, I was kind of looking at it, thinking, when you hear about possible candidates and like that name came up and I was like, I wonder what it would take to pry him out of there because he's been there for 11 years. And as I mentioned earlier, yes, he did. Was on the sideline at Beaver Stadium. He may have gotten in the game late, but Schaub was the quarterback. Penn State won the game with complete ease that day. But he's actually the starting quarterback to begin that year, and Schaub replaced him. And Schaub stayed as the starter in three and in four. So, all right. Sorry about the Pollard thing. I hate to see anybody get hurt like that.
Oh, me too. It looked bad. It was weird because the Fox broadcast even said they were calling it a high ankle sprain, but he was in an air cast. I'm thinking to myself, that's got to be worse than a high ankle sprain because if that were the case, Mahomes wanted to play it unless it was just worse. There was some structural damage or something.
Part of it is what they're told.
Well, right. No, I get that.
Part of it is what they were told.
No, I'm not blaming Fox. I'm just saying I think there's more to it than what they were given.
By the way, quarterfinals of the Australian Open. Now it's going to be at 3 a.m. But Kim and Terry Pegula's daughter, Jessica, who's the number three seed, is playing.
How about that?
She's in the quarterfinals.
Wow.
She's got a real shot here. She's got a real shot. It's
That's awesome. That's pretty exciting.
And you know what? What's interesting, too, is this. You do know that that, to my knowledge, Patrick McEnroe and Chris Fowler are not there.
Oh, that's a change.
They're doing it from the studio, I think.
Hmm.
And to the credit of Andrew Marchand, he has called them out on it.
Yes.
He said ESPN and Fox have decided to have second-rate operations for some major sports, which reflects poorly on the networks and the events they are covering. He wrote, let's start with Fox Sports, which embarrassingly failed to have its announcers at each of its college football games this fall. It's like, now, they were at every Penn State game. There was, that booth was not empty for Penn State games. But there's a lot more to this. It started, it actually, for anybody who thinks that the pandemic is when this has started, that would be incorrect. There was a year where Penn State basketball, I want to say it was maybe the 17-18 season, had five games where Dick and I would look over at the announcer's table and they weren't there.
Wow.
They were calling the games in Charlotte, which is ESPN's second base of operations.
Right.
They were calling the games in Charlotte, and there was five of them that year. Like, wow.
One of many things wrong with both networks.
I mean, I know they're trying to save a dollar here and there, but again, ESPN is in Connecticut covering the Australian Open. And this is one of the four majors.
Yeah, that's a little embarrassing on their end. Not only that, too. That's you're asking a lot of your on-air talent to. I mean, it's one thing if you're calling something that's a few states away or even coast to coast. When you're talking about broadcasting from two opposite ends of the world, I mean, if something goes wrong, you're just out of luck.
Well, I remember Cal played, oh, I can't remember who. Cal played somebody to open the season in Australia. I think it was one of the first times I remember a football game being done where the announcers weren't there. Like, okay. Not cool. That's not cool at all. I don't think. I think that's a disservice to the fans.
No question.
I cannot begin to tell you, because we were forced to be in the studio for, I think Dick and I did, 7 or 8 games from the studio during the COVID year. Everything else we did it, you know, we were at games. Jack and I did it. We were on site for every game.
Right.
Dick and I were on hand for every home game plus a couple of road games, okay? But there are other games in the Big Ten that we weren't allowed to travel.
Including the tourney, if I remember correctly.
Including the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah.
And the difference between being there and having the tapestry in front of you where you can see all the chess pieces as opposed to being locked in on a screen, there's the difference is... And they tell you, when the original point to us was, you'll get all these different viewpoints, you just pick the one you like. No, it's a mess. It's a mess.
I believe it.
And we tried it for a couple of games like that, and the two of us are like, "This, just give us a picture, and then we'll figure it out." And then we would find out on the scene how close the game clock was on the countdown to the clock we had on our countdown on the screen to see then how much of a leeway. Now, some of them were pretty close, like a second and a half, and some of them were 5 to 7 seconds. Like, okay. So you just kind of work with what you have. But it's not easy to do. It's not the announcer's fault. They're being told to do it that way. That is a company decision. And that's, oh well.
Won't be the last worst decision they've made, both those companies.
Well, I think it's a disservice to the fan. I really do. And isn't that what this is all about? It's about the fans.
Yes. And this is why I've always hated the corporate world trying to pretend like it knows what great content is in not just in sports, but just all sorts of media. You're seeing it across all over the place, especially in radio now, where the corporate world tries to determine that money's better than content, and it's not. And it's just a disservice to the fan, to the listener, to your consumers. It's very sad to where it is right now.
Yeah, well, fortunately, we're not in that spot, which is good.
No, absolutely not.
Fortunately, we're with people who get it.
Yeah.
And you could talk about a new way of doing things. Okay. Now, does every old way of doing things, is that correct? No. Sometimes new ways of doing things are better. But the same is also true. Some of the new ways are worse.
So exactly.
You've got to figure out what the right balance is between the old way of doing something and the new way of doing something, and then pick what is best for the audience. All right. We'll come back more in a moment. Dave Zangaro, final half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, motorcycle, boat, RV, whatever it may be. They'll find you the best insurance so you're fully covered. They'll make sure that you also get the best price. May do it in bundles, but they'll try and do everything they can to save you money. It is all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Dave Zangaro joins us. Dave, how have you been?
Busy, but it's been good. It's been a fun year.
Dominant over the Giants. Looked the same way, I thought, Saturday night that they did when they played in the Meadowlands. Is that how you saw it?
Yeah, and I think really it was just the talent disparity shined through in that game. The Eagles are just clearly a better team than the Giants, and the only way they were going to lose that game was if they really beat themselves. Turned the football over and made a bunch of mistakes. They didn't do that, and that game went about the way you'd expect for a mistake-free game from the Eagles. They're just a better team than the Giants, and they took care of business. You give them credit because they knew they were the better team, and they didn't overlook them. They played tough, and they got it done.
Yeah, no question. What's the town like to you? What's the town like right now?
Fired up. It's a lot of fun. It feels the way it should feel, you know, especially after a game like that, because there was a kind of a little lull at the end of the season, and that's natural because they needed to win one of the last three games to clinch number one seed, and then they lost two in a row without Jalen Hurts, and the offense sputtered without him. They get him back for week 18, but it's this really limited playbook, and Jalen, clearly the team didn't want him to get any extra shots, and they didn't want him to get him hit in that game, so the offense wasn't what you wanted to see coming down the stretch, but there were reasons for that. So I think there was maybe a little trepidation from fans wondering what it would look like in the playoffs. But once we saw the answer to that question, not that anyone ever left, but everyone's back on now. It's full steam ahead. It was a lot of fun at the link on Saturday. The atmosphere was incredible. I'd expect even better and even louder link on Sunday, but it was a lot of fun on Saturday. It feels the way it's supposed to feel right now.
What did you think of Lane Johnson's performance?
Just a gutty performance. I mean, to think that he's playing through a torn adductor and that he played that well and that he played the whole game. I mean, I know they took him out the last three snaps when they rested the rest of the starters, but that was the biggest question to me going into this game is, can Len Johnson even hold up? And early in the game, he started kind of grabbing at it, and he didn't look comfortable. And in my head, I'm thinking, uh-oh, this isn't good. But then he really settled in, and I know it was painful. But he did it. He got through the game. And it's a bigger test on Sunday, obviously, with Nick Bosa coming to town. But I'm not counting Lane Johnson out of anything. I think he has the opportunity to do it. And also, I mean, they know that if they win this game, they'll get an extra week before the Super Bowl, and that extra week could mean a whole lot for Lane Johnson and for a few of the other players who are a little banged up. So give it all you got on Sunday and hope you get through it clean like you did in the divisional round, and you go from there.
It's going to be interesting to see what D'Amico Ryans does, whether he lines up Armstead or Bosa more often than not against Lane Johnson. I think that's going to be an interesting decision on his part.
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, Bosa has played a lot more on the defensive left this year,
yes.
But they do move him around, and he'll split time. It's just like, what will that split look like? If I'm the 49ers, I probably want to see how Lane holds up against him. Pretty early in that game before you really start moving him around. Jordan Mailata on the other side is pretty good, too. It's funny, we haven't talked about Mailata much this year because I thought early in the season he wasn't playing at his best. He had a shoulder injury that I think was really affecting him negatively. But he's settled down, and the last half of the season he was much better. He's a really good left tackle.
The breakdown on the Giants game was exponentially easier for anybody who follows the sport because they played twice. Now, the last one may have been a watered-down game, but they at least played twice. So everybody had a great handle on the matchups. What about this one? They haven't played. So what do you think?
Yeah, it's the thing that stands out to me is just the talent. There's going to be a ton of talent on the field. Both rosters just have so many good players.
Yeah.
And a lot of the strengths really line up. And when the Eagles are on offense and that 49ers defense is on the field, I mean, that is a heavyweight bout that I can't wait to watch because the Eagles have pretty much had their way with anyone they want this year up front. And that offensive line, starting with Lane and Kelce, but including Mailata and Landon Dickerson and Isaac Seumalo, is about as good as it gets in the NFL. But this 49ers defense is fierce. And they attack at all levels. The speed they have on the field, you know, their front is pretty good, but then you get to the next level, and they have, to me, the best linebacker duo in the league. Fred Warner is a freak. And then on the back end, their corners are a little susceptible. I think you can throw on them a little bit, but then you have a guy like Hufanga at safety who's just a heat-seeking missile at all times. That's a fun defense to watch. D'Amico Ryans, who we know really well here, we all knew he was going to be a great coach whenever he wanted to get into the game. He has those guys playing really hard, and they attack. They're a fun style of defense. They attack, they get after it, they force turnovers. But the Eagles have been able to deal with pretty much everything offensively this year, so I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun to watch.
Jalen Hurts has been exceptional this year, one of the top five players in the entire league. Brock Purdy was the last guy selected. He is the third-string quarterback for San Francisco. What do you know about him in the brief period of time? What do you think pro and con of him in obviously the research you've done?
Yeah, he's been performing pretty well. But, you know, I've really gotten a chance to watch him the last 2 weeks in the playoffs. And there are chances for the opposing defense. Have been moments where... I mean, if Seattle had a few chances to pick him off, we saw Dallas. I mean, Trayvon Diggs probably makes that play 9 out of 10 times in the red zone. He couldn't pick off that pass that was tipped. So there have been moments where Purdy hasn't been playing at his best, and it'll be up to the Eagles to capitalize on that. They have enough on defense. They have enough talent there that they should be able to first affect him up front. I know Trent Williams is... Hall of Famer. He's a freak at left tackle, but the rest of that offensive line is susceptible to pressure. They can move Purdy off his spot, and I think they can force him into some mistakes. It's really going to come down to can the secondary make him pay for it. If they can, I like the Eagles' chances.
Yeah, because even the great play that Kittle made, where he's juggling the ball at midfield, if you really watch that play out all the way through, Diggs is that close to actually getting the ball at the end. And Kittle's concentration made all the difference. They're a team that throws a lot. When they throw the ball, they want to throw the ball between the numbers. You've watched. I've felt that outside the numbers, the Eagles have been exceptional this year. How have they been inside the numbers in past games?
Are you talking about the Eagles' defense?
Yes.
Yes. They've been pretty good. And the interesting thing here is Avante Maddox, whether or not he'll be able to play.
Right.
Eagles are hoping he'll be back at practice this week. that would be a big boost, because then you get to push C.J. Gardner-Johnson back at safety. And with how much zone they play, spacing is really important. And whenever you're missing someone in the secondary and you're playing that much zone, the spacing can get a little wonky at times. So getting him back will be a big deal. But it's been nice to have a player like Gardner-Johnson,
yeah,
who has that versatility. He played safety all year, but, I mean, really in his career, he's been a nickel corner. They've been able to just slide him up for the last couple of games, and he's been completely fine at that nickel spot. And surprisingly, the undrafted rookie Reed Blankenship has filled in quite nicely on those nickel downs when they slide Gardner-Johnson up. He comes in as a safety. It looked like early in the Giants game, they tried to target him, and they thought, uh-oh, this might be a long game, but he settled down so nicely, and he's fearless. He drives to the football, really aggressive player. I've been impressed by him, but ideally, he's off the field this week, and Avante Maddox is back.
Yeah, but, I mean, Blankenship's outstanding when they decide to pretend they're faking a punt. I mean, that's... that does give the Niners something to think about, by the way. Jalen Hurts is the key to the whole show. No getting around it. Because, look, you get down to the red zone. If you have to spy him, that takes a guy out of coverage. There's a lot of things that work to the Eagles' favor because of the way Hurts plays. What did you think of the performance? You know, that game was a tale of two games. He started hot, and then he actually was cold the last half of the game. So what did you think of him?
It's funny. You look back at his numbers, and you say 154 yards passing, and you go, huh, must have not been a good game.
No, they ran
the ball.
I
thought he did exactly what he needed to do.
Yes.
It was just completely efficient quarterback play. And even the rushing numbers, I think he only had 34 yards rushing.
Good
but
enough.
The threat of his rushing and getting a few runs early in that game, letting the Giants know this is still a threat and you got to worry about this in the backside, it changes things. And their run game is obviously the offensive line's been really good, and the running backs have been great. Miles Sanders has done his job.
Yeah.
But Jalen Hurts is what makes the run game go, and that threat. And I'm curious to see how the Niners handle it. They've been one of the better run defense teams in the league, but they haven't played Jalen Hurts yet. And, you know, they played the Bears, but it was all the way back in week one, so you almost throw that one out. They haven't played a running quarterback like this, so I don't know how the numbers will affect it. You mentioned the possibility of them spying Hurts. They have the players to be able to do that, but, you know, like Fred Warner could certainly spy Jalen Hurts. But then the Eagles would probably be happy with that. You have Fred Warner out of coverage? Yeah, sign me up. So the 49ers are going to have options, but if they have to allocate resources to Jalen Hurts in that fashion, he's going to be able to pick them apart in the passing game. So that's going to be a fun cat-and-mouse game.
Yeah, to me, the spy part of it is not in the middle of the field. To me, the spy part of it is in the red zone. And that's where if you have to commit somebody in the red zone, now you've done two things. You've taken a guy out of your blitz package, and you've also taken a guy out of coverage. And to me, that's why it's one of the reasons why Jalen Hurts has been invaluable to the Eagles this year, especially when they get inside the 25-yard line, because teams have been forced to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Hey, great talking with you today. Appreciate it. I know you're really busy, and we will see how it goes this weekend. Should be a lot of fun.
All right, thank you. Take care.
Dave Zangaro joining us. By the way, Matt is wearing his Jalen Hurts jersey today.
You bet I am. This is what I wore on Sunday, or Saturday night, I should say.
We're not back to that Patrick Mahomes practice jersey commercial, are we?
No.
This is clean, right? Then the girl faints, come from the spot.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
Kind of glad now we're in separate rooms. So you've worn this jersey now for 3 days?
No, just Saturday night.
Oh,
and
sure.
Yeah.
You just tell whatever story you're telling here. Go ahead. You've worn it 3 straight days.
I've worn it 2 out of the last 3. Saturday and today.
Today's show is brought to you by Tide. No. We'll take a break. Today's show, of course, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Hurts is back. He's going to go with the draw. He's going to run. He's going to score. Jalen Hurts.
He's healthy.
You, sir, are my hero.
He did get hit on the play. There's nothing wrong with his legs. Am I missing something here?
Just overall, he looked like himself.
He didn't get hit on the play.
Not on that particular play, no.
There's nothing wrong with his legs. Okay, Patrick Mahomes has an ankle injury. Nothing wrong with his legs.
Well, at that point, the Eagles were about to make it 28-0, and things were really humming and looking pretty good. So I think that was what Mike Quick was trying to say.
So tell us about your experience on Saturday. You were physically there.
Yes.
This had to be one of the great experiences of your life to be at a playoff game like that.
No question whatsoever. It started as soon as Dad and I walked in. I mean, you can feel the electricity right away. We went straight to the WIP tent and met our buddy Glenn Mack now, who's joined us from time to time. Mm-hmm. So it was good to meet him in person. And then we saw them interview the honorary captains from the Super Bowl 52 team, Torrey Smith, Brent Celek, and Malcolm Jenkins. So that was pretty cool. We up close and personal there to see that. Then we went inside and got our seats, and our seats were perfect. It was in the upper deck, first row in the end zone, where the Eagles scored their first two touchdowns.
Oh, that's great.
So it was
fun.
Perfect view, nobody in front of you. I think we're going to use these seats in the future. And it was just amazing just to see everything from side to side. Everybody, every time the Eagles fight song was playing, it was the time of your life. It really was. It was loud. It was deafening at times. Mm-hmm. Doesn't come close to whiteout, though. I will say that. I thought it might come close to whiteout, but it was close.
But you got to remember, there are 40,000 fewer fans.
That's exactly right.
So
yeah,
that,
but it was still
fair here.
It was still really loud, though. I mean, it was just a fun night, and just the way, and of course, the way the game went. It was just so much fun. It really was. And walking back was a lot of fun too. And everybody celebrating. It was just a great night. Can't beat it.
Oh, I bet it was.
A night I'll never forget.
I'll bet it was. I'll bet it was just festive from... my understanding was they weren't allowed to tailgate because the Philadelphia Wings were
correct.
Playing.
So the loophole was, because the Wings had a 1 o'clock game.
And my understanding is that the Eagles fans sold out the Wings game, so they could then park their cars and tailgate.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That was the loophole. So there were about, 20,000 or so fans that were tailgating since 8 a.m. And let's just say it definitely showed.
Well, it's a night game. I always refer to night games as a finely tuned crowd. So
yes.
It's going to be that way.
There were
no
definitely
where
some
you
of
are.
Those times. And yeah. The verb, not the physical, everybody behaved themselves, but the verbal abuse was definitely there. For a good amount of Giant fans that made the trip down.
Well, it's not that far. So,
no.
You know, but
yeah.
Like,
it was fun, though.
The Giants, to even get to that point is a remarkable job by them. Because, look, they were pegged to be an under 500 team. The fact that they got themselves into it, put themselves in this position, but now you're in the big leagues here.
Exactly. Yeah. Eagles showed it.
And the Eagles have a lot of elements have fallen directly into place. Now this is a mystery game.
Yeah.
I didn't think the Giants game was really much of a mystery game. I really didn't. They'd beaten them twice. The game at the Meadowlands was like, which was a carbon copy of what we saw on Saturday.
Pretty much, yeah.
The way they ran the ball. So that was already, like, you already knew which matchups the Eagles had advantages in. I think there were 11 of them. No,
it felt like it.
But you already knew going into the game where their matchup was exponentially better. This is one, because they haven't played, you don't know. I mean, in other words, Kansas City and Cincinnati, you kind of have a pretty good feel about what the matchups are like, because they play every year against each other. They play this year against each other. For some odd reason, the Eagles did not play the Niners, and I don't know why.
Well, they'll play them next year, because the NFC East plays the NFC West next year. But
I don't know why, because weren't the Niners the second-place team last year?
Yes, they were.
And so were the Eagles, right? Or were they third?
They were second, I think. Yeah, they were second.
I don't understand why they didn't play. You're supposed to play everybody on the line that you're in.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question.
It's odd. So, I mean, there's more of a mystery with this. And that's what makes it a little more intriguing. And, look, did Brock Purdy at times look like a third-string quarterback yesterday? Yes. Were there other times where he looked in command of what was going on? Yeah. So I don't, in this spot, I don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah. And both teams are really similar. So, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating game.
And remember, Trent Williams is on one side.
Oh, yeah, and he looked really good, too.
Well, that's because he's probably the best left tackle in the game.
Yes.
All right. McClinchy's on the other side. This is not a shabby group here in front of him. We'll see. That's why this one's so intriguing. The Giants game, you kind of knew going in, my wife asked me, what do you think? I said, they have no chance. I said this game will be a rout. I said, the matchups are all bad. This game, you can't really, Cincinnati and Kansas City, you have a better feel of the matchups. They play all the time. They may not be in the same division, but they've been playing. I mean, that's why Cincinnati's beaten them the last three times.